Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back. We are going to continue the halacha of the workplace, but with a twist. We're not going to talk about you working as a secretary in somebody else's office. Today we're going to talk about you as the big business owner of the bank and of the corporation, all other things like that. Or even if that's not in the cards for the next year or two, it could be applicable in other ways at home. We're going to talk about the halachas of ribis, otherwise known as charging interest, which is an iser d'oraisa, clearly. But there's so many difficult and challenging and questionable ways in which it's applicable to very, very, very common household experiences. And we're going to talk about some of the paradigms of ribis. We'll talk about lots of applications of ribis. I do want to just tell you ahead of time that there will be a lot of questions that I'm asking without necessarily answers that I will be giving. With all the other shiurim, I found it a lot easier to sort of ask a question, work with the sugya, and give you a definitive answer. Here, because of the nature of the halachas of ribis, of charging interest, they're very complex, and the tiniest little detail changes the whole story. And at least ribis questions are often the kinds of questions that don't just come up, they often happen well in advance of when you will actually find yourself in a contract or in a deal, and you could sometimes prepare and ask a shayla, but at least you'll know now that there is a shayla to ask, you know what shayla to ask, you know when you do have to ask a shayla. You can always ask a shayla, but especially in ribis, now you'll hopefully have some parameters after this evening. Maybe we'll have one more shiur about this. But let's begin with this. Few people know that America, New York State, has laws against ribis. They're called usury laws. The difference is that for New York State, there's a certain percentage of interest that is reasonable and therefore allowed to be charged. Above that, it's illegal and you can get thrown into jail for charging more than a certain interest rate. Torah is different because between two Jews, you can't have any interest being charged. Now, if you've ever wondered why your credit card statements only say that you'll pay 29.4% if you don't pay up your credit card bills, and they don't say 70%, which they might as well get themselves into, because it's good for them. The reason why they only say up to 29.4, or whatever the numbers are, is because they are bound by state and federal law that limit their abilities to charge ribis, to charge interest, and they work within that. Let's back up, not with the Isser d'oraisa of charging interest. Let's start with a positive. Let's start with a mitzvah saseh, to lend money to another Jew for free. A free loan is a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa if another Jew is, you know, teetering, and he's sort of having a tough time financially, and he needs a little bit to sort of pull him over the top so that they won't fall, they won't collapse, the business won't collapse, they'll be able to make it to the end of the month. There's a mitzvah to say d'oraisa to lend, not staka. This is not staka. This is a separate mitzvah of v'chai achicha imach, believe it or not. It doesn't say lend money. It says, may help your brother keep on living. And therefore, if you don't do that, rather, you don't offer that free loan, rather you charge interest, there's a different, not an asay, but a lo ta'asay, actually two lo ta'asays. Et kaspecha lo titein lo b'neshech. Do not give your money to him with neshech. Neshech is with interest. And then another pasuk says, or the end of that pasuk, that you can't borrow money with interest. So you can't lend money and you can't borrow money. Now this is interesting because usually when we think of interpersonal interactions, what are you usually not allowed to do? I can't hurt you. I can't break your window. I can't steal from you. I can't say lashon hara about you. I can't damage you. But does it say anywhere that you can't be damaged? You can't have your window broken by my baseball bat? You can't be the victim? Well, here, you're not even allowed to be the victim. You're not allowed to pay the interest either. And even if it's in your best interests, no pun intended, even if it's good for you to be able to borrow money, usually when people borrow money, they borrow money because they want to borrow money. If you want to borrow money and you need the money and they're going to charge you a very fair interest rate, they'll charge you nowadays you can take out a mortgage for 4% and you're dying to get that loan for 4%, take advantage of the interest rates. If you go to your Jewish counterpart and say, I want to borrow money to buy my house and I'll happily pay you 4% a year, that will be usur for you to pay the 4%. Even if you're interested in doing it, even if it's in your best interest, it is still usur daraisa, both for you to pay the interest and for him to charge the interest. Now, let's try to define the word interest. Interest could be in different forms. Interest could be 4%. What that means is 4% a year. 4% a year. Interest could be, I'll borrow $10 and I'll give you back 11. It could be a set dollar amount. Interest could be, well, for every month that I still have, I don't know when I'm going to repay you. I don't know when my business will turn around and I'll be able to pay up all my bills. But as long as I have the money outstanding, I'll give you $1 a month. An extra $1 a month interest. All those are different forms of ribis that are all mida oraisa, asur to charge and asur to pay. Let's imagine the following. We all know that there's inflation, there's deflation. Let's say when your mothers were kids, I'm sure they told you that when I was your age, it cost how much to go to the movies or to buy an ice cream? I don't know, it depends on how old your mothers are. For some it's 5 cents, for some it's 10 cents. You know, the younger among us might have been 25 cents. And the cost to take a train also, never more than a nickel apparently. So let's say I realize that there's something called inflation. That means my money now will be worth less as the cost of items go higher. I mean, right now I have, in my wealth, I have $10,000. Right now $10,000 could buy me a secondhand car, 5-year-old secondhand car. In 20 years from now, $10,000 might be enough to buy myself a scooter for my son. So how can I protect myself? I'll borrow money. Well, let me rephrase that. I'll lend somebody money, but I have to protect myself. So I'll just link the loan to the consumer price index, the CPI, which takes into account not the value, not the number of dollars that's being handed over, but the value, the purchasing power of the money that you're borrowing. So what am I going to do? I'm going to say, I'm happy to lend you money. I'm not worried about inflation rates and the value of the money 5 years from now. I'll be happy to lend you money because right now, for this amount of money, I could buy a basket of goods with, you know, a tomato, a loaf of bread, a jar of milk, and whatever else for this amount of money. And in 20 years from now, I will also be able to buy what I expect to be repaid, whatever amount of whatever number of dollar bills it takes to buy that same basket of goods with a tomato and a loaf of milk, a loaf of bread and a jar of milk, and whatever else I might have said. That's the consumer price index. Could I lend money like that? Because I'm not getting back anything in return. I'm not getting back any additional value. It might take more dollar bills to get me that value. I'm going to lend you $10 now. You might have to pay me 20 years from now more than $10 bills. You might pay me $20 bills, but it's buying the same amount of goods. It has the same purchasing power. Is that permitted? Now, when you're lending money to your friend to buy a soda, that's less applicable. When you're taking out a loan for a house for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, that's very applicable. And there's no question that all the banks take into consideration when they make their calculations what the rates of inflation are going to be. The answer is that is also usur. If I give you money now, you cannot pay me more dollar bills later, even if those dollar bills buy the same basket of goods as they bought earlier. You cannot give more dollar bills. The last amud in, let's back up, the perek that in Shas that talks about all the halachas of charging interest is the fifth perek of Bava Metzia. It's called Ezehu Neshech. If you're ever going out with a guy, or you're married to a guy, mazel tov, and he says he's learning Bava Metzia, so be a wise aleck and say, oh really, which perek? If he says Ezehu Neshech, it's good. Okay, Ezehu Neshech is known as the hardest perek in Bava Metzia, one of the hardest prakim in Shas, because the details are so complicated and there's so many similar cases that are just a little bit different, so it's known throughout Shas as being one of the hardest prakim in Shas, Ezehu Neshech. Ezehu Neshech means what is Neshech? What is Neshech is the biting that Ribis does to the borrower. What is interest? The last amud, last side of the page in Perek Ezehu Neshech has a phenomenal Mishnah. The Mishnah says that not only is there a violation of the Issa Daraisa of Ribis for the borrower and the lender, but even for the Arev. The Arev is the guy who signed the guarantee, the co-signer on the loan. Not only is it on the borrower and the lender and on the Arev, on the co-signer, it's also on the Edim, who witnessed the transaction, assuming that the lender would never lend the money without witnesses. Not only is it on the lender and the borrower and the guarantor and the witnesses, but it's on the sofer, the Issa Daraisa, presumably Daraisa, of enabling Neshech to happen, enabling interest to be charged, is even on the sofer who draws up the documents, which in English I might call a lawyer. If you're a law, if you're in the legal profession, and you have two Jews for whom who are your clients, or one Jew is a client, and you're drawing up a contract with another Jew, religious or not religious, presumably it doesn't matter nowadays because the non-religious people nowadays are, they sort of don't realize, you know, it's not it's a complicated question. But certainly if you have two Jews and you're a lawyer for a contract and there is involved anything that has the word percent or interest, be very wary and very careful about abetting, about helping, about drawing up contracts for that deal. And the people who ask the most ribbis shilas are not the businessmen, but they're the lawyers. Because for every one business deal that you do, a lawyer might draw contracts for a number of them. So that's something to be aware of. One interesting question, which is not really going to impact on anything that we're going to do tonight, but it's a good thinking question. There are two kinds of mitzvahs. A lot of kinds of mitzvahs. There's mitzvahs ben adam l'makom, ben adam l'chavero. Or let's put it in different words. Let's put it in Shulchan Aruch words. We know that there's Choshen Mishpat. The Chelek of Choshen Mishpat of Shulchan Aruch deals with all kinds of interpersonal monetary issues. I mazik you, I damage you. We have a disagreement in terms of a purchase. Some contract negotiation. I buy a house. I want to know if the swing set is included, is not included. That's Choshen Mishpat. You go to a Beis Din. There's another section of halacha. Is this kosher? Are you allowed to do this on Shabbos? Is the tefillin or the Sefer Torah written properly? That's all in Yoredeya, Arachayim Yoredeya. So the question is charging interest going to be in the first category, in the Bin Adam L'Chavero halachos? Or is it going to be in Yoredeya, which is presumably the halachos of Bin Adam L'Makom, but the better word is ritual versus legalistic. That's the best way to describe the difference. Believe it or not, you will not find the halachas of ribbis in Choshen Mishpat. You will find them in Yoredeya, which talks about all the halachas of what we call ritual stuff. Kashrus, Hilchos Nida, Hilchos Sefer Torah. All those things are grouped together with Hilchos Ribbis, which in a certain sense means the following. If you have a shayla in Hilchos Ribbis, you don't go to a Beis Din, you go to a Rav. The difference between a Beis Din and a Rav is that a Beis Din is when there's something between two parties that has to be adjudicated, you have to go to a Beis Din. It's something that's a question, just a halachic question of you knowing what to do, you don't go to a Beis Din, you go to a Rav, to Paskin, and for Hilchos Ribbis, it is the second way, it is in Yoredeya, and therefore you don't have to go to a Beis Din, although the people that are the experts in Ribbis also usually have affiliations with Batei Din, because it usually involves financial awareness of financial issues, which usually Dayanim are more expert than regular Rabbanim. Okay, we started off saying, any questions about the introduction? We started off saying that there's a mitzvah, say, for me to lend money to a Jew who's teetering, tottering, and needs cash. Is there a mitzvah, say, for me to help a guy who's equally teetering and tottering and needs cash? Well, there's no mitzvah, say. Is there something wrong? Maybe not. Maybe yes, maybe not. But there's nothing, there's no mitzvah to say obligating me, being mechayev me as a chiv d'araisa, to lend a free loan to a guy. Well, if there's no chiv d'araisa to lend the money, then also there's not going to be an iser d'araisa for me to lend him money with interest. Therefore, halacha l'maisa, you can charge interest when you lend to a guy, and you can pay interest when you borrow from a guy. When do we do that? When you borrow money from a bank. A bank is presumably the halacha of a guy. We'll see some finer details a bit later. Perhaps with Jewish banks, perhaps with Israeli banks. Maybe we'll have time today, if not another time. But when you borrow money from a bank, you are borrowing from a guy, let's say Citibank or Chase. Those are certainly, the vast majority is owned by guy. I mean, maybe there are little Jewish shareholders, you know, a few Jewish shareholders scattered around, but it's primarily a non-Jewish entity. So you can pay them interest. When do you lend money to a bank? Any of you here ever lent money to a bank? Anyone here who has a savings account has lent money to the bank, right? They don't want to use the word, please lend us money, we want to borrow money from you, because if it says like that, what do you think in your mind when you hear the word borrowing and lending? Somebody not being able to pay back. So they don't want you to think, oh, we're not going to be able to pay back the loan, the money that we borrowed from you. So they don't use the word borrow. They call it deposit. The word deposit is a much nicer word. That's like, it's your money, of course. We're just going to leave it. You give us the dollar bills, we'll lock it up for you in your little room, special for you. And when you need it, it's available for you. That's a big piece of baloney, of course. That's a marketing ploy. Deposit just means they're borrowing money from you. And you know what they're paying you because they're borrowing money from you? They're paying you interest. So when you deposit money in a bank, in your savings account, you are lending a bank money, and they are giving you interest. You're Jewish, aren't you? Yes, but the bank isn't. And therefore, the bank is allowed to pay interest, or they don't care because they're not Jewish, but you're allowed to take interest from the bank because it's a non-Jewish entity. What about the following situation? And this is again, halacha ma'aseh, it's less applicable, but it's something to think about. Let's say I lend the Gentile money. And it's a five-year loan. 2 years into the loan, all of a sudden they decide to convert and become Jewish. So now we're going to be in a bind, and we'll speak out both sides of the coin. Let's start with this case where the guy is the bank. The guy is a banker, and he realizes he lends you money. The Jew borrows money. I take out a loan to buy a house. I take out $1 million from Christopher, McChristopher's bank. And after seeing how honest I am in my borrowing, he starts asking me little by little. He decides he wants to be a guyer. So a few years into the loan, he lets me know, Rabbi Orlin, guess what? I just became a Jew. So now, am I happy or am I sad? Well, until now I was paying ribbis. Now what happens? All of a sudden, who am I paying interest payments to? A fellow Jew. Could he take that money? Absolutely not. Now that he's Jewish, even though the loan was extended, he extended me a loan, he originated a loan to me, and it was mutter for him to charge me the ribbis. Once he converts, even though the loan started out, the heter, but right now the interest payments are being made, the isur. And therefore, I will not be able to pay him the interest, and he will not be able to collect those additional interest payments from the moment that he converts. What about the back monies? Let's say I didn't pay the interest for last month, and he converts. Do I own last month's interest? Because I'm paying it now while he's a Jew, but it's interest that accumulated while he was a guy. That's a good question. The Shulchan Aruch deals with it. The Mepharshim of the Shulchan Aruch deal with it. We won't. The one way to get around this is before he converts, he should do the following. He should say, you know that you're supposed to be paying me X amount of interest over the next amount of years. What I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of restructure what we have right now so that instead of you paying me principal plus interest over the next 10 years, let's just conglomerate it. Let's just join it together, pull it all together into one bigger loan without interest. But let's start anew right now, and it's just as though you owe me a loan worth a larger amount. If he does that before he's Megayer, that will be okay. Because what am I paying him now after he's Megayer? I'm just paying him the principal of the larger loan that we set up between ourselves. That would be the solution before. So if there's any banker who plans on becoming a Jew, this is what we would advise him to sort of amalgamate, combine all of the interest plus loans into one big fat loan, and that larger loan can be repaid after he's Megayer. Now things get more fun. Let's talk about the opposite scenario. Let's say there's a borrower and he needs money, so he realizes that all the bankers are Jewish. So what does he decide? He said, hey, I'm having money problems. I'm always borrowing money. And I'm borrowing money from the banks, and the banks are all Jewish. I guess it pays to be a Jew. So he learns a little bit more, and then eventually he becomes interested genuinely, and he is Megayer, Kedas v'Chedin. So now, what theoretically ought to happen next month when he gets his bill from Yankel's bank, or from Safra Bank, or from Bank Leumi, or from Berkshire Bank, or from Fairmont, there's a famous Fairmont mortgage company case that made its way into the law code, American law codes, a few years ago. We'll talk about why maybe a little later. So he borrowed money from them. Now he's a Jew. What should he do? He should write them a letter. Dear sir, please find the check enclosed for the amount of principal that I owe you for this month. And regarding the interest payments, I'm happy to tell you that I went to the mikveh this morning and I will no longer be making any interest payments. Thank you so much for your kindness, and I look forward to continue paying you the principal only from now on. It's a good deal, no? That's a great way. If there's a Jewish loan shark and a Gentile borrower, a great way for him to avoid having to pay the interest would be to be Megayer. What do you think people would say if that happened, about that person's geiris? Come on, I know why he was Megayer, not because he liked gefilte fish and cholent. He was Megayer because he wanted to get out of those interest payments that were squeezing him. So of course he was Megayer. He's not genuine. He's not for real. Just wanted to save money. Chazal didn't want that to happen. So Chazal did something fabulous. Chazal said, even though you're Megayer now, Mr. Goyenau Jew, and theoretically you should not be, it should be an Issedaraisa, not to Rabbanu, but Daraisa, for you to pay interest right now to the person who lent you money, the Jew who lent you money years ago, we're going to say to you, Mr. Ger, continue paying that ribis that's also Daraisa. Why? Because we want to protect your image, and we want to make sure that people will not question your Gerus. And for that social tikkun, they were willing to uproot not just an Isser D'Rabbanan, but presumably an Isser D'Oraisa. Presumably the Rishonim deal with how could they have the power to do this? How could they say, go ahead and violate an Isser D'Oraisa, they're only D'Rabbanan. How could they have the power to tell you to actually take money out of your pocket, Mr. Ger, and give it to the Jewish bank? That's an Isser D'Oraisa right now that he's a Ger, or she's a Ger. How could they have the right to do that? After all, their own Rabbanan, and they're telling you to violate an Issa D'Oraisa. Okay, how they do it, that's a different question. That's not for us. But that is what they did, and that is what the halacha is. That Ger will continue to make those interest payments, even though he's Jewish, and even though it's also D'Oraisa, presumably. Chazal said he should continue to pay those interest payments to protect the image of that Ger. And so nobody speaks badly about that conversion. That's going to be the discussion in terms of Goyim and Ger. Any questions? Terrific. We'll come up to other situations in terms of how to define people as Jews. For example, are corporations people? Are they Jews? Are they not Jews? Are they Goyim? Are they Jews? Are they not people? That's something we'll talk about either later tonight or another time. Let's talk about trying to get a better definition of what exactly is interest. Interest, and it's going to sound a little funny, but if you think about it, interest is the rental fee for cash. I rent a car for $50 a day. I rent a lawnmower for $7 a day. I rent a plasma TV for the Super Bowl for $80 for Super Bowl Sunday. Well, I rent $100 for $4 a year. That's called a 4% interest rate. So an interest rate is the rental fee for using money for time. Now, why is it different? How come the Torah says you're not allowed to pay the rental fee for cash? I can't pay $4 for the $100 that I'm borrowing, but I am allowed to pay $40 for the car that I'm using. What's the difference? If there's a mitzvah that I should lend out my money for free, so shouldn't there also be a mitzvah that I should lend out my car for free? If there's an issa d'oraisa for me to pay a rental fee on the money that I'm borrowing, shouldn't there be an issa d'oraisa for me to pay a rental fee for the car that I'm borrowing? For the plasma TV that I'm borrowing? So here, the Gemara says that when you rent something, you're not just paying for the value that that person doesn't have available to them. Really, when you rent a car, it's not that you're paying the car owner for the fact that he doesn't have his $30,000 of metal and machinery and electronics available to him. You're paying that person, that car rental agency, for the depreciation of the car while you're using it. Now, cars depreciate. Plasma TVs could depreciate. Cash doesn't depreciate, because that's exactly what cash by definition is. If you ask an economist what is money, they'll tell you it's something that stores value. Something that stores value itself doesn't depreciate. All other things could become more or less valuable relative to money, meaning bubblegum could go up in price or down in price. It doesn't mean, let me back up. We classically assume that the dollar goes up or down. Halacha never sees dollars going up or down. Halacha always sees as a dollar is a dollar. All products become more expensive, means it takes more dollars to buy them, or less expensive, less dollars to buy them. So the products became more valuable or less valuable. The products appreciated or depreciated. But halacha always perceives money as being a stable, set unit. In the same way, if you have a yardstick, if you have a ruler, those 12 inches or those 3 feet, those don't change. You could get taller, you could get shorter, and you'll take up less space of that yardstick. But the yardstick stays the same. The same is true in Chazal's understanding of money, and in terms of understandings of money, there's a lot, I mean, you could probably get your PhD in how to in defining money and defining these kind of things. But Chazal's understanding of money is that money stays like a yardstick. Everything else goes up and down relative to the yardstick, but the yardstick doesn't change. The dollar doesn't change. So therefore, when I rent to you a dollar, is there a depreciation with time? No. A dollar is a dollar at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year. It could be over the year things became more or less expensive, but the dollar remains the same. That's just what ribis, or what interest is. Now, there are two kinds. There's ribis that's d'oraisa, there's ribis that's d'rabbanan. The basic way to divide up, again, there are a lot more details, but the basic way to divide them up is when I lend money and interest is charged, that's asa d'oraisa. As opposed to, and listen carefully, when I buy something from you or sell something to you, and there's a time delay involved which will have an interest rate associated with it, or will have some interest payments associated with it, since it's through a sale, not a loan, that's only going to be d'rabbana. I'll give you one example, which maybe we'll talk about a bit later, but I'll just set it up. I'll just mention it now. Let's say I buy a car from you, and the car is $30,000. I don't have $30,000 cash on hand, so you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, let's say, I already put down $5,000 as a down payment. There's $30,000 left. You'll give me the car right now, and I'll pay the $30,000 that I owe you either next week, next year, in 2 years, or perhaps what we are most familiar with, every month on a regular basis for the next 3 years. For the duration of, I don't want to say the word lease because that might involve not a purchase. I am talking about a purchase. So for the next 3 years, I will pay off the $30,000 that I owe, $10,000 a year at 4%, 5%, 6% interest. That is money that is interest that's happening because of a sale. That's only asa d'rabbanan. If it would just be that you want to borrow, what? Sure. If I lend you money and you pay me interest, that's going to be asa d'oraisa. If I bought something and the payment of the money that's outstanding, you charge interest on, since it's in the context not of a loan but of a sale, that's not what the Torah was talking about when the Torah was talking about ribbis. The Torah said, don't lend money and borrow money with ribbis. Here, you're not borrowing or lending. You're selling something, and he's not paying up the money that he owes.
Why would the mortgage fall under any?
Excellent question. The answer is, because when you take out a mortgage, you are buying the house from the house owner. To enable you to do that, let's say there's a house that's $1 million. So you have to give the owner of the house $1 million. But you don't have $1 million, you only have $100,000. Where are you going to get the extra $900,000 to give to the owner of the house, you're going to borrow money from the bank.
But doesn't the bank technically own the house? So it's depreciating in value.
That's a good question. That's going to be a technical question in terms of how the mortgage documents are drafted. I don't know if the pshat is that they own the house or that if you default and don't pay up after a certain amount of months, then they will foreclose the house and take ownership of it. So I don't think they own the house. I think you own the house. And as long as you're making your monthly mortgage payments over the 30 years, then they'll let you keep owning the house. If you default, so you allowed them to take over the house in place of the money that you owe them. But they don't really own the house. You own the house. Unless you default, in which case they'll take it over. That's a foreclosure. Okay. Let's say we have a situation that I don't know if there's going to be any interest. Meaning, if I know we're setting up this situation that you're going to pay 10%, you're going to pay $5 extra, and we know ahead of time that that's going to happen, then it's going to be asur d'oraisa. Let's say we're not sure if there's going to be interest. For example, I'm borrowing $10 from you, and I'm going to pay you back. The plan is I pay you back at the end of the month. But if I don't pay back on the end of the month, and right now it's a free loan, then you're going to charge me a late fee. Or let me give you a better example. I live in Israel, and I have electrical circuits in my house. I have lights, I have refrigerators, I have air conditioners, so I pay a light bill to the electric company. I pay an electricity bill to the electric company. Now I'm supposed to pay my bill at the end of the month. What happens if I pay my bill at the end of the month? They're happy and I'm happy. If I don't pay my bill at the end of the month, what are they going to do? They're going to charge me a penalty for being late. Now, when I used the electricity, I began to owe them the money. I didn't know, no one knew whether I would ultimately pay up or not pay up on time, whether I would incur a late penalty or not incur a late penalty. So at the time that the loan was set up, there was no interest spoken of. But when it comes to the actual situation, after that month passed and I didn't pay up, another month passed and I didn't pay up, now all of a sudden there looms before me and something I didn't realize, that I didn't know about beforehand, namely a late fee that wasn't set ahead of time that would definitely occur. That, since it's not definitive, it wasn't definitively established that there would be a late fee, there would be an interest payment from the beginning of the loan, that will not be asur d'oraisa. That will only be asur d'rabbanan, and there will be a lot of kulas regarding that. Excuse me. Yeah. Even though it was specified, it wasn't specified this situation, that this month you're going to pay interest. It was specified that if something happens, you will be liable to pay. So that's a good point. The fact that the possibilities are outlined, that doesn't make it asur d'oraisa. It's only going to be asur d'oraisa if we say, I'm borrowing money and I will be paying you this interest. If something happens and therefore I will have to pay you interest, that's not d'oraisa. Excuse me. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyah B'dvarav. So let's get into some specific scenarios. I'll talk about this one only because, not that halachically it's the best one to teach educationally, but this is the most common, let me not say the most common, but this is probably the main, one of the main scenarios that halacha lemaisa, you will come across ribis mida araisa in your own, not day-to-day living, but it could happen to any one of us 2-3 times in our lifetime. Let's imagine the following. You, being an industrious, intelligent young lady, get yourself a job, and you're working, and you have a steady income, and your brother, being the lazy, slobbish, incorrigible young man that he is, can't get himself a job. So now, he figures he found a job, but it's 45 minutes away, and there's no public transportation out to the island or over there, wherever he got his job, and he needs a car. But he doesn't have money to buy the car. And he doesn't have a credit card to put a down payment on either. But you have a credit card. You're working. So he says, hey, sis, I have a great idea. You love me, don't you? Yes. Okay, good. So therefore, since you love me, could you please do me the following favor? You're not going to lose a penny. Take your credit card. I'll use it. I'll pay the $5,000 down payment on my car with your credit card. And over the next few months, I'll pay back the principal and whatever interest that they charge, I'll pay it all back. Would you be willing to do that for me, my dear sister? I mean, he might be a slob. He might not be able to get himself together, but you trust him. He's your brother. I hope, somewhat. I only have brothers, so. Is that going to be mutter? What's happening? He's paying interest. He's paying interest to the credit card company. And it sounds pretty fine because he's borrowing. He paid the down payment with your credit card, so he's borrowing the money from the credit card company. And he's paying the interest. You're not losing a penny. So you're neither gaining nor losing nor lending nor borrowing. You're sort of nothing. You're just providing the plastic. Is that okay? Well, let me try to present this same scenario with a little bit more with a few more definitions to who the parties involved. There's a credit card company, and they have a client. That client is you. When they allow money to be charged to the credit card, who's borrowing that money? You are, or your brother is? They have a deal only with you. They approved you. They have a contract with you. They don't even know who your brother is. They didn't know you had a brother. They probably wish you didn't have a brother. He's only a liability. So they're a lender. You're a borrower. When you use a credit card, you're borrowing from the credit card company. How is the money getting to Yankel? What? He's borrowing it from you. Right. So the credit card company gave it to sister, lent money to sister. Sister now lends money to brother Yankel. That's how the borrowing happened. What about the repayment? Yankel writes out a check to the credit card company. What's really happening? Who's really paying the credit card company? In effect, you're really paying the credit card company. Who actually writes the check, and do they mail it directly to you or to the credit card company? Doesn't matter. The credit card company is crediting your account with the money that you owe, whether he paid it or he gave it to you to pay. He's paying you the money that he borrowed from you with interest. And you're doing whatever you have to do with your credit card company who lent it to you. So what is really happening here is we have two separate loans. We have a loan bank to sister, and sister's paying back the interest. That's okay because the bank is not Jewish. American Express is not Jewish. But there's a second loan that's happening here. Sister is lending $5,000 to brother. Brother is paying back $5,000 plus 10%, an extra $500 of interest to sister. And she's going to do whatever she'll do with it with. What does that mean? That means he borrowed money from his Jewish sister. He's paying back money with interest to his Jewish sister. That was a violation of an Issa d'Oraisa of Ribbis. So you thought you were a great sister. He thought you were a great sister. And really, everyone seems nice and happy and friendly and helping each other. That ended up being an Issa d'Oraisa. Yes?
Why can't he just say, instead of borrowing $5,000, it's going to be, including the interest, it's going to be $6,000. So I need to borrow $6,000 from you. You can charge $5,000 on your credit card, but really I'm borrowing $6,000.
If you structure a deal like that, that would probably be okay. I don't know if you'd be able to do it using the credit card. She'd probably have to, you'd have to just add some documentation. You could do that. If the brother says, you know what, sister, I'm going to borrow $5,500 from you, and that $5,500 from you that I'm borrowing, I'll give you back. So now he has $500 extra dollars to walk around with. Well, he put down $5,000. But wait, how much did she give him? She only gave him $5,000, and he's giving back $5,500. Right?
She's not using that $5,000.
She repaid the bank the money that she owed. How much is she giving him?
$5,000 down payment on my card.
Right.
With the interest, it's going to be $5,500.
Right.
Sister, can I borrow from you $5,500? Can we
And is she providing him with 5,500?
Yeah.
She's providing that extra 500 to him? So he's going to have an extra $500 in his pocket because of this?
So then it will go back to her. Like, meaning it's
not... I'm not sure if it's going to add up, because if she's going to actually give him 5,000 plus the extra 500...
If you use it... Okay, if someone were to hand you cash and then charge it on their credit card, then it wouldn't be an issue. Meaning I'm charging... Someone needs can buy a car, like, it's much easier with a credit card than going in with...
Right. So what the sister was nice enough, not only did she give him $500 for his pocket, she's also paying $500 interest to the bank. That's a very good sister.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry that I only have three brothers. She's a very nice, or, yeah.
Okay. So to go back to what you were saying before, if you have the brother borrowing from the sister who's borrowing from the bank, but in one case the brother is just renting the car, and in the other case the brother is buying the car.
Okay.
In
terms of the borrowing, he's still borrowing. By using her credit card, he's borrowing money. What he does with that to pay a Avis agency budget rental car, or to pay back, Friendly's car sales, what he's using the money for doesn't matter. The fact is, in his relationship with her, he's borrowing money from her and paying back money from her. How he used that money, that doesn't matter for this point, for this specific point. It's not going to matter how he used the money. If she sold him something and he paid her with a credit card, then if there's an interest that he's going to have to pay her now, that will only be a drabana. So if she sold him something and he's paying back interest for the sale that he bought from her, that would be drabana. But if he's only borrowing money and doing whatever he wants to do with it, whether it's a sale or a payment or a rental, whatever it is, since he's borrowing money from her and paying back a loan, that would be daraisa. Yes?
What if, the sister whatever pays the credit card, and then, the end of the month of the bill comes, she automatically, pays that all off? So, doesn't it, and she start accumulating, and people only pay,
That is correct. That's... If the sister was if they did it, let's talk about case two. Thank you. The case two is that you all feel so guilty because this happened last week to you. That's why you're all giving me a hard time, because last week you were nice enough to give that down payment for your brother, and now, oh my gosh, Rabbi Orlean said it's an issur d'oraisa. What can I do? The answer is what you just said. You quickly have to pay off that $5,000, so you're not going to incur any interest rates, so your brother won't owe you a penny extra. And that's great. There's one problem. You just lent your brother $5,000. Which I don't know if you want them to do. But that would be the solution. That would be the solution. Any other questions? Yes? Well, we could substitute. We could say it's not your brother, it's your parents. No, chances are the two people that would do this are siblings and parents, basically, or very close friends. But it's usually sisters or parents. If you want to do something that you don't have the money right now, but your parents, they're not going to pay for it, but they'll, do it for you. They'll help you by letting you use their credit card. But you're going to be responsible for all the payments, including the interest payments. That's going to be the sister d'oraisa.
So.
But are they pay? If they buy something, they're allowed to buy you things. But if they're saying, you're buying it, we're just providing you the plastic with which you'll buy it, and you have to pay us back for the penalties that are going to be incurred, that's where we have a problem. They could buy you whatever they want, with a credit card, with cash, however they want. But if they're saying, you're going to be responsible to pay for it, and it's going to be with interest payments, because you're not going to be able to pay up right away, and then you're going to have to pay your parents those interest rates, because... You just use that plastic. They were nice to you, so let you use that plastic. That's when there will be an issur. Yes? Question?
Yeah.
No? Yeah.
What if there's a Jewish institution that you go to and you borrow money from them, as a loan, and then
yes.
After a certain amount of years, you have to pay it back?
That's an excellent question. Let's say, for example, there's somebody who you might know who went to a Jewish school or something like that, or some Jewish educational enterprise, and because of tuition, that is a lot of tuition, you happen not to have $46,000 cash on hand at the moment, and you took out what they call a student loan. And a student loan was not from the government. We'll talk about governments maybe a different time. It was not from a private bank, but it was from the institution itself, and it's a Jewish institution. So how are you going to be paying a Jewish institution money with interest? That's a very serious problem. Yeah, it's a very serious problem, midaraisa. That has to be discussed. Yes, it's an excellent question. Yeah, okay, we'll leave it at that for right now. Let's talk about a... Yeah, question? Yeah. No, you've, well... You have to, if your parents took out the loan in their name, and now you're paying them, I mean, let's say Mr. and Mrs. Cohn took out a loan for little Rifki Cohn to go to Stern College. So Mr. and Mrs. Cohn borrowed $100,000 from wherever, at 5%. Now that little Rifki Cohn is old enough to go to work, she says, you know, Mom and Dad, I'm old enough to pay my own loans back, and I'll pay you the money that is outstanding. So, in a certain sense, I have to just work out the math. I have to figure it out. I can't do it on the spot, but you have to work things out. And if these things are halacha maaseh, you do have to work them out with somebody. Any other questions? Okay, new topic. Yes. Maybe. Banks in Israel are one step ahead. They have heteriskas, which we didn't talk about what they are, but that I'd like to talk about. Do all Jewish institutions that lend money for tuitions that people take out loans have heteriskas? I hope they do. That's something that we'll talk about. It's a document that, which we'll talk about, that solves lending with interest for practical applications. That's something that, I don't know if we got to it today, but that's over here. Let's talk about something that is much more... Yes? Excellent question. So you're with your friend and they pay your subway fare of $2.25. And next week you only have dollar bills with you. Let's start with that. So could you pay your friend $3 because they paid $2.25? I would say no. I would say 75 cents is something that is enough that you'd at least think about, like, I'd rather just wait till tomorrow and give them a quarter. However, if it was $2.30, if you had 3 dimes on you and you said, For that nickel, I'm going to have to go ask somebody for change and go to a store. It's just not worth my... If a nickel fell on the floor, I wouldn't even pick it up. So I'm going to have to go waste 10 minutes finding a nickel, so changing my 3 dimes into a quarter and a nickel so I could give her $2.25. That would probably be mutter, because that extra 5 cents is basically insignificant. It's an extra 75 cents on a $2.25 loan. That I would consider probably more significant. And that might be usser. Now, it won't be usser d'oraisa. Why? Because it wasn't set originally. It wasn't like, I'm going to buy you a subway token today and you're going to pay me back $3 next week. If that was set ahead of time and that was the deal, that would be osa d'oraisa. If you end up paying back more since it wasn't set, that would be osa d'rabbanan. If it's only 5 cents, it would probably be mutter because it's insignificant. But if it's the 75 cents, which is, in my mind, significant, that would be osa d'rabbanan. That's a good point. You know what? I'd like to borrow $1 million at 4% a year for the next 30 years from you, Mr. Bank, because I really want to buy this house. And if you don't give me this loan, I'm not going to be able to buy this house. And you know what? I'm going to be mochel to you that 4% a year for the next 30 years.
That's a lot of money.
That's true. But I mean it. I really want to buy this house. And this is the only way I could do it, is by borrowing it with interest, because that's how people borrow money. The answer is, when it comes to mechila, let me rephrase that, when it comes to ribis, mechila does not work. You can't be mochel ribis to somebody else. This is something where it's different, and it ties into what I said at the very beginning. In all other cases of me damaging you, me hurting you, it's only asr on the perpetrator, the antagonist, the mean guy. But the poor victim is always, you know, always in the right. He didn't do anything wrong. She didn't do anything. Here, the person, the victim, who's paying, this poor person doesn't have any money and needs to borrow with interest just to buy their next cup of milk. If they pay interest to get the loan that they need, even the paying of the interest is going to be asr. And therefore, of course, if you could be mochel interest, you'd be able to take this book and throw it out, because you don't, you can get out of every single case of ribbis, if you just said that mechila would be permitted.
So
mechila is never permitted, period. It happens to be that those 5 cents, I don't even know if it's mechila. I would call that just like not even giving anything extra. I mean, my halach, if I look at it from a halachic lens, I wouldn't call it, I'm giving you 2025 cents and I'm being mochel the 5 cents. I'm giving you 2025 cents, period. 2030 cents is the same as 2025 cents. That's how I think my halachic glasses would look at it. I'm not being mochel to you interest. I'm not sure what I'm saying is correct. Okay, so if you want to know where the cutoff is, I found a very cute, I wasn't going to say it, but I found very cute in the footnotes of Rabbi Reisman, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, who is the Rav in the Agudas Yisrael of Madison in Flatbush, and he gives a famous Motzei Shir. So art school asked him to write an English book on Hilchos Ribbis. So in one of his footnotes, he brings that which I mentioned a minute ago in passing without drawing attention to it. He said, he brings down one of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael say that if it's the amount of money that you wouldn't pick up in the street, a nickel, you wouldn't pick up. So a nickel is definitely fine. A quarter? I don't know. I'm not sure if that's the perfect description in terms of how to define what's a significant number, what's a non-significant number, but that's just one thing that I saw in print. But for example, let's say you owe somebody, you know, $4,900. Could you give them $5,000 because it's just rounder? No. Because that $100, $100 is an hour, two, three, four of work for you. And you're right, you'd have to go to the store and wait online for 20 minutes in the bank at the teller to get it online, to stand in line and get the, you know, break your $1,000 bill into, you know, hundreds. That would be asr d'oraisa. I mean, depending if it was set up that you'd pay me $5,000. If it wasn't set up so it would only be asr d'oraisa, it would be asr. Yes. That's a complicated question. So the question is, I lend you $2.25 and you say, I lend you $2.25 and you say, give me $2 and 25 cents and the extra 75 cents, give to tzedakah. That's not so simple, because if you're giving that money on behalf of a person who lent money to you, so instead of taking it for their own pocket, you're putting it to the place where they want it to go. That might also be problematic. You think you're a big tzedekes, don't you? Yeah. Oh, that's all. I'm only talking about loans. If this is not for repayment of a loan, we could always round up or down however we want. There's no loan extended. I'm only talking about when it comes to repaying a loan. If I laid out money for you, and then you want to... Oh, okay, so I hear what you're saying. Let's say your roommate gets the electricity bill, and you have to split it three ways, and 97 cents is hard to split three ways, so you just round up. Everyone will pay whatever. So she laid out money for you, so that's a loan. She lent you money. Oh, that's annoying. It's easier to have it to one person. They write the check. You don't even have a checkbook. She does. It's in her name. It's much. Just. I have to think it through. These are all questions. That's why I didn't plan on getting into details, because I know every detail that I'd have to think through and not be able to think through every detail on the spot. But yeah. And you'll pay her back later. So she lent you money, now you want to pay her, and you want to know, do you have to pay exactly if you just round up? So.
We share money a lot.
I want to be your friend.
We'll go out to eat and she'll pay on the next time.
Excellent question. This is a question that we worked on for quite a bit of time this year. I'm in the Yadin Yadin Kollel in YU, is learning Hilchas Ribbis, which is Hilchas Ribbis, right, which is what we're learning right now together. So what I spend like 3.5 hours every day for the past year on, I'm going to sum it up in like 40 minutes. And because of the high intellectual capacity of the young woman this year, I will be able to do everything that I did this year in the next about 4 minutes or so. So Baruch Hashem, it's a pleasure to have people of your intellectual capacities here. So we talked about that. Apparently the words in the YU cafeteria is, you spot me lunch, I'll spot you lunch. That's the proper vernacular, just so that we got the language. So you spot me lunch and I'll spot you lunch, is that mutter? That's an excellent question. So it depends on what the nature of your spotting is. If you like to spot lunches that I'll pay, you know, I have my CAF card today, you don't have your card, CAF card with you, so I'll buy on my CAF card, that's just French for I will lend you money, I'll buy dinner on your CAF card, and tomorrow you'll buy me dinner on your CAF card. So, as follows. If we are the kind of friends who share money, and you just buy me things, I just buy you things, and no one really cares, I wouldn't bat an eyelash if you spent an extra dollar on me and I spent an extra dollar on you, maybe that would be mutter. But if I care about, if it's not like my close friend, it just happens to be, but the guy who down the hall in the dorm happens to walk into the cafeteria when he didn't have his CAF card and I have my CAF card, well, we're not like buddies that we buy things for each other. If I would buy him something for $7.25 and the next night I want to buy something, so he's going to buy something for me that's $8 and $8, that theoretically would be a problem if it's an amount that we care about. Meaning, if you're buying me a meal just because you want to give me a present, because you like buying me meals, and I like you, so I'm going to buy you meals, and we'll just like that, and a lot of people are like that, then there won't be a problem, because each individual time, it's not alone. I give you a present. You give me a present. We have a relationship where we give each other lots of presents. Sometimes you, sometimes me, somebody might be a little extra, somebody might be a little, in the red. It doesn't bother us because that's the nature of our friendship. That's okay. What's not okay is if we're not in that kind of relationship, but I'm buying you dinner because you don't have money on you, so you need the money, and the next day you're going to repay that loan. To me, that would be a problem if the dinner would be more. Yes? Yes, that is the same problem. If I want to say, you know, thank you for the loan that you gave me, here's $100,000 back, and here's $4,000 as a present for being nice enough to lend me the money, that is called interest. Even if it's not, obviously I'm just taking it, what? Yes, that's not called a present, that's called interest. It's probably not d'oraisa because you didn't set up ahead of time. Maybe it's something that would be called, this gets actually much more complicated, I wasn't going to get into it and we won't, but there's something called ribit mu'ucheret, or in French, ribit mu'ucheres, which means after you borrow money, you pay back the money. After you pay back the money, you gave something extra. If you said it's for the loan, that's usr. If you didn't say it's for the loan, that's machlokas rishonim. And thank you. Excellent question. Excellent, excellent, excellent question. Can I borrow 3 jelly beans from you because I really need a jelly bean right now? And tomorrow, when you have jelly beans, when I have jelly beans, I'll give you 4.
Oh, I wasn't
asking that. That's usr. That's usr, possibly d'oraisa. Believe it or not. Believe it or not. If we have a loan, it doesn't have to be cash. It could be cookies. It could be, obviously it's only going to be if we set up right now that there's going to be a rate. You know, I'm going to give you an extra thing. But we're not just talking about cash. We're talking about any consumable item, right? Not borrowing items. In English, you can't do justice, but in Hebrew, there's a difference between the word halva'a and she'ela. Borrowing items is different than a loan. In English, there's no equivalent to that distinction that you do have in Hebrew. Halva'a is something that you give me, I'm going to consume it, I'm going to eat it up, I'm going to spend it, and I'll give you something else that's the same equivalent. You could lend me money, I'll use it, I'll give you different dollar bills. You could lend me apples, I'll eat them, and I'll give you other apples. You could give me wheat, I'll grind it up, turn it into flour, and next year I'll give you wheat or flour. That's all a loan that will be subject to ribbis. If you lend me your car, and I'll give you back your same car with, I don't know, something extra, or a rental fee, that's not called a loan. If you lend me your hammer, and I give you a hammer and another hammer, that's not called a loan, that's called a borrowing a hammer, or renting a hammer, and paying a rental fee of another hammer. So that's a distinction, that loans and ribbis only applies to things that are consumable items, or I think in economic terms, non-durable items. Yes? Fabulous question. Fabulous question. So let's switch. Can I have a pen? Good for that. My bad. Okay, so we'll switch. We'll talk about that right now, and we'll do this a different time. So what happens, we'll talk about what you asked, and then we'll finish because it's getting late. Let's say I want to lend you apples. Okay? I want to lend... let's try to think of something more common. Okay, let's say you're going on vacation and you just bought a dozen eggs. Okay, and it's in the fridge. You're going on a vacation for the summer, for 2 weeks or whatever. So you say to your roommate, and you don't have a good relationship with your roommate. It's not like you buy each other stuff all the time. You say, may I come in? Yes, please enter my room. I want to alert you that I'll be leaving for the summer. I want to let you know that I will be happy for you to use the dozen eggs that I left in the top left in my section of the refrigerator. She says, thank you very much. I'll be happy to give you back 12 eggs, a dozen eggs, when you return on September 1st. Thank you, a pleasure. Please close the door well on your way out. What might happen over the summer? The price of eggs went up, let's say. So now she's going to give you different eggs. So that was a loan. It was a real loan. You lent eggs to her. She borrowed eggs from you. She's going to repay different eggs to you. And now the eggs are worth more. So that's called, let me rephrase that, that's Asudu Rabbanan. Not only is that Asudu Rabbanan, but the Rabbanan were worried about something even less severe as that. They said that since we're worried that maybe the price of eggs will go up, we don't even want you to lend eggs in the first place with the intention of getting paid back eggs later on. That's called, in the Gemara's language, in the Shulchan Aruch's language, sa'ah b'sa'ah. Sa'ah is a quantity that they used to measure wheat in. I'd say a gallon for a gallon. A gallon for a gallon. Sa'ah b'sa'ah. That's also d'rabbanan. If I give you a gallon of something now, and all you're going to do is going to pay me the same exact gallon of the same item, same grade, same quality, double A, B, whatever it is, 2 months later, that itself, even if we don't know what's going to happen to the price, we don't know how the price is going to fluctuate, that itself is also going to be also d'rabbanan. Because maybe the price will go up. And maybe you'll end up giving me more value than I gave you. Now this opens up huge amounts of questions, which I don't think we have time for, but let me at least leave off with two questions, and we won't give answers, at least now. Two questions will be, you know that nice lady next door? That whenever you run out of oil or eggs, you go next door and borrow from her, and then you give back what you borrowed from her next week after you go to Key Food. So what happened? You borrowed 3 eggs from her, now you're giving back 3 eggs from her to her. You ran out of flour, you wanted to bake a cake or something. You borrowed a bag of flour, next week you're going to give her back a bag of flour. Is that going to be usser? Because maybe the price of flour changed? Or similarly, you borrowed a car that was full of gas from your friend, and you returned the car. Maybe you paid rent, maybe you didn't pay rent. Let's say you paid rent, but what you're giving back, the gas that you're giving, was 2 weeks later. And there you and I definitely know that the price of gas changes every day, a few times a day even. Should that be usur d'rabbanan to ever borrow like that? Thirdly, and if this will end, and again we're not going to give answers now, just something for you to think about, let's say I don't borrow cake, I don't borrow flour. I don't borrow gasoline. I borrow money. But it's Israel and I'm borrowing dollars. Or it's America and I'm borrowing shekelim. So maybe, let's say today, you give me, I'm going to Israel, God willing, June 29th. So I will not be here for the summer. That's true. That is true. We will not have shirim for the summer. I'll be in Israel, God willing. You're all welcome to come with me if you fit. If you want to send anything with me, you're welcome to do so. Just slip it under my door anytime that you want. And if it fits underneath, I'm happy to take it. When I get to the airport, I'm going to want to pay the Nesh. I don't like paying him dollars. I want to show him a real Israeli. So I want to have shkolim on hand right away. Do any of you have shkolim that I could borrow? And I'll pay it back after the summer. So now you're lending me money, or you're lending me apples, or gasoline, or flour. Well, what's the status of shekels in America? I don't think it's called money. Halacha does not consider it money. If I lend you $100, you could pay me back $100 in America. If I lend you 100 shekels in America, I don't know if we could so simply say, just give me back 100 shekels in America. It might be, that's the question that we're going to ask right now, regarding the halacha of sa'ah b'sa'ah. Thank you very much, and perhaps next week we will continue with these very fascinating and involved halachas.